예수란난무지전우랑주노 예수란난무지전우랑주노 야무나치르바느짜리 야무나 지르바너 짜리 자이어라다 마르바 운적비하리 자이어라다 마르바 비하디 자이야 꽃피잖아발로바 이리바다다리 자이야 꽃피잖아발로바 이리바다다리 예수란란란너그지잔느랑주노 예수란란란너그지잔느랑주노 야무나 찌르바나 짜리 야무나 찌르바나 짜리 야이야라타마드바 군잡이하리 자마드바 군잡이하 야이여라 터마드바 군잡이하리 잠마드바 야이여 꽃피잖아 발로바 이리바다다리 꽃피 나나나 자이야 꽃피잖아 발로바 이바다다리 꽃 여수라 난다노지 잔나랑지노 난다나무젠 여수라 난다노지 잔나랑지노 야무나 찌르버너 짜리 야무나 찌르버너 짜리 하데 크리스나 하데 크리스나 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 하디 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 나무 하디 나무 라무 라무 하리 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 크리스나 하리 크리스나 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 하리 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 라무 라무 하리 하리 자이여 라타만다 자이여 프라부파다 자이여 프라부파다 자이여 프라부파다 Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Padavijaka Acharya Asatara Satya Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Panda Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. And all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The text for today is number 26, the canto is 1, and the chapter is 19. Today, there will be a little different arrangement than we normally do, and that is because tomorrow is World Enlightenment Day, and we want everyone, if possible, to go out and to distribute these incredibly great books. And I thought I would try to segue part of the verse that I will be doing into the subject of book distribution, which is actually one of the basically forms of devotional service, Sankirtan, the Brihat Madanga. So, but what will be done today is I will read the first three in English, the first three verses, 26, 27, and 28. Then we will do 29 together, and then from the purport of 29, I will launch into the subject matter of distribution of books, its necessity, its value, its greatness. So first let me begin with just the translation, and no need to duplicate. Just these first three lessons I will do by myself. They do have purports, very small one, about six or five lines. Translation of text number 26. The son of Vyasa, by the way, I don't condemn or prejudice against the Sanskrit. It's just that we only have so much time to cover so much material, and I felt that this would be the most expeditious way to do this. The son of Vyasadeva was only 16 years old. His legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders, forehead, and the other parts of his body were all delicately formed. His eyes were beautifully wide, and his nose and ears were highly raised. He had a very attractive face, and his neck was well-formed and beautiful, like a conch shell. Purport. A respectable personality is described beginning with the legs, and this honored system is observed here with Shukdeva Goswami. He was only 16 years of age. A person is honored for his achievements and not for advanced age. A person can be older by experience and not by age. Sri Shukdeva Goswami, who is described herein as the son of Vyasadeva, was by his knowledge more experienced than all the sages present there, and there were hundreds of sages present there, although he was only 16 years old. We all know that he was, at least most of us know, that he was born as a God-realized soul. In fact, he remained in his mother's womb for quite a while because he did not want to come out and join the material world. He was quite comfortable meditating on the Supreme Lord while he was in his mother's womb. But anyway, the only way to get him out would be to bring Krishna there, and that was what happened. Krishna was brought there, and Krishna told him to come out, and of course he did come out. Text number 27. Translation. Description. His collarbone was fleshy, his chest broad and thick, his navel deep, and his abdomen beautifully shaped. His arms were long, and curly hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked, and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna, which means darkish. Purport. His bodily features indicate him to be different from common men. All the signs described in connection with the bodily features of Shukdev Goswami are uncommon symptoms. First of all, his very long arms. Those are not common amongst ordinary human beings. Generally speaking, like Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, they had very long arms, which is a symptom of a great sage. It doesn't mean that anybody who has long arms necessarily is a sage, but it does mean that many sages did have long arms. All the signs described in connection with the bodily features of Shukdev Goswami are uncommon symptoms, typical of great personalities, according to physiognomical calculations. We all know what physiognomical means, don't we? Physiognomy means face, okay? And physiognomical is basically the adjective describing. Physiognomical means, as it's mentioned here, calculations. Now, in India, there are many different sciences. For example, they have a science of signs. For example, if a cow moves on the right side of you at a certain time of the day, it's auspicious. Or if you get a wolf that moves on the left side of you at a certain time, it may be inauspicious. So there are different auspicious and inauspicious signs. And it's a whole science, by the way. Similarly, there's a science of physiognomy, the face. If you have certain kinds of lips, you have thick lips, or you have thin lips, or you have pointed ears kind of up like this, or you have ears that flap out like this. It has a definite symptomatic expression of a person's personality to some extent. So that's what Srila Prabhupada is describing here. Pardon? Somebody said something? No? Oh, okay. Anyway, so the nose, the shape of the nose, sometimes people look like criminals, and they are criminals. I've seen that. Yeah, sometimes a person has a look on his face as if he's ready to kill somebody, and sometimes he does. So, the expression on the face, the way the eyebrows are shaped, the way the eyes are, big lotuses we see, always describing Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda and Lord Sri Krishna. So these lotus-like eyes are also considered to be very auspicious and symptomatic of great spirituality. So we're going on to the 28th. I finished the purport, did I not? Huh? Okay, fine, thank you. That was on 27, was it? Yes. His bodily hue resembled that of Lord Krishna, who is the supreme among the gods, demigods, and all living beings. Text number 28. He was blackish and very beautiful due to his youth. Because of the glamour of his body and his attractive smiles, he was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy, and so they honored him by rising from their seats. In other words, just by looking at his face, they knew that he was a very great, glorious, wonderful personality. They saw all the different signs, you know, the big lotus-like eyes, a smile on his face, a peaceful expression, so many different things which they could immediately notice. And therefore, they gave vent to their feelings of reverence and devotion and veneration. So now we go to the verse for today. And I don't think I will need the book. That will be verse number 29. So I made it up here. I'm going right into the verse. So, is it on there? Sa, Savishnu? Okay. Savishnu Ratho Titaya Agataya. Tasmai saparyam sirasa jaharam. Tato nivritaya buddha striyobaka. Mahatsane supa vivesha pujitaha. So Vishnu Ratha Titayagataya Tasmai Saparyam Sirasa Jahara Tato Nivritaya Buddhastri Urbaka Mahasane Supa Vivesha Pujita. So Vishnu Ratho Titayagataya Tasmai Saparyam Sirasa Jahara Tato Nivritya Buddha Sri Yorubaka Mahasane Sova Vivesha Pujita. Please. Mahasane sopa vivesha pujitaha. Vishnu Ratha Tayaga Agataya. So Babish Vesus Bhagata. Ladies, please. Mahasane sopa vivesha pujitaha. Any other ladies? No? Synonyms, Saha, He, Vishnu Rataha, Maharaj Pariksit, who is always protected by Lord Vishnu, Atiteye, to become a guest, agataya, one who arrived there, tasmai, unto him, saparyam, with the whole body, shurasa, with bowed head, ajahara, offered obeisances, tattaha, thereafter, nivrataha, ceased, he, certainly, abudaha, intelligent, striya, women, arbakaha, boys, mahaasane, exalted, seat, sa, he, upavishvesha, sat down, pujitaha, being respected. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. Maharaj Pariksit, who is also known as Vishnu Rata, which means one who is always protected by Vishnu, bowed his head to receive the chief guest, Shukadeva Goswami. At that time, all the ignorant women and boys ceased following Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Receiving respect from all, Shukadeva Goswami took his exalted seat. So let me just backtrack for just a few moments. It happened to be that, as mentioned, Shukadeva Goswami, he was not wearing any clothes. And he was walking in such a way as if he was just totally absorbed. And he was totally absorbed in the Supreme Lord. He saw nobody else. Complete absorption. And the way he was looking, to an ordinary person, you would think maybe he was a little crazy, because first of all, he didn't have any clothes on. Everybody else had clothes on. So also, no devotees should try to follow in this example at this point in time. just parenthetically, let me mention that when I was heading up the the Bhakta program, we had one particular devotee who said he wanted to be an actor, and it was, I remember, it was in March, and I was on my way, had to get to India, and so I left, and then when I came back, I noticed that particular devotee was gone, and I said, well, what happened to him? They said, well, one day they found him out on Venice Boulevard. I said, well, what do you mean they found him? I said, well, he didn't have any clothes on. He was just walking down there as if he were an avadut. So this is not to be desired, and not only that, it will not help our movement grow into spiritual splendor. As Prabhupada so often says, we have plenty of crazies and plenty of lazies and in-betweens. We want more in-betweens rather than those. So, moving on. To the purport. On Shukadeva Goswami's arrival at the meeting, everyone except Srila Vyasa... getting back to the point. So these ladies and boys who were following Shukadeva Goswami, they just thought he was mad. They thought he was crazy, like the guy who was out there on Venice Boulevard. People thought he was crazy, and they did call the police, and they didn't have long to take him right up to the mental ward of Bratman Memorial. It was just like a half a block away. And so he was off Venice Boulevard quite quickly. So similarly, these ladies and these boys, they were mocking him. They were ridiculing him. You know, like when little children, they see something which is odd or something a little bit off the wall. You know, they point their fingers. They go, ha! You know, look at that. Ha! You know, this guy. So this is what they were doing. And but then when all these sages, they stood up and they put their palms together and they bowed their heads. Is this the person they're doing this to? And yes, it was the person. Not only did they do that, but they also offered their full obeisances out on the ground. And as soon as these boys and girls who thought that he was crazy, they kind of backtracked and made a quick beeline out of that particular place, because they realized it was not a place for them and that he was far beyond what they could even conceive or understand. So they left that area. Purport. On Shukadeva Goswami's arrival at the meeting, everyone except Srila Vyasadeva, Narada, and a few others stood up, and Maharaj Pariksit, who was glad to receive a great devotee of the Lord, bowed down before him with all the limbs of his body. So why Srila Vyasadeva, Narada, and a few others? It's mentioned that, I mean, everyone except those exalted personalities, except them, they did not stand up, and they were not required to stand up because they were more advanced accordingly to than even Shukdeva Goswami. We have the father of Shukdeva Goswami, at least from appearances, and we have Narada Muni, who's an incarnation of bhakti, and there are many other great souls, so they simply remained seating, and they were not making any offense. But those who are considered themselves less advanced than Shukdeva Goswami, they of course did pay their obeisances and considered the great honor to be in his presence. Shukdeva Goswami also exchanged the greetings and receptions, and again, those who he felt who was his equal, he would embrace or he would shake hands with. There was nodding and bowing down for those he felt were above him. He would bow down to, especially before his father and Narada Muni. Narada Muni is a great exalted sage and known all over the universe, and is considered you might say, the sage of the demigods. They look up to him for guidance. Thus, in fact, he has a name. I think we'll be coming to that in a moment. Thus, he was offered the presidential seat at the meeting. This is Shukdeva Goswami. Prabhupada uses this word because we can immediately recognize presidential means the highest seat, which was the Vyasasan at the meeting. And when he was so received by the king and the sages, the street boys and less intelligent women who followed him were struck with wonder and fear. So they retired from their their frivolous activities, and everything was full of gravity and calm. So these two words, gravity and calm, is what I'd like to take off from. Actually, in a group of great sages as we have here, gravity is a seriousness. It's a sobriety. It's a fixity on what they're going to be dealing with, which is the absolute truth. There is a sense of veneration, a sense of respect. There is a sense of adoration. This is what brings the gravity. There's no joking around, no playing around, no frolicking, no frivolous expressions, no ideas or thoughts coming out which would not be in accordance with that particular group of persons. So there was gravity and calm, calm meaning, of course, serenity and tranquility. And the question really comes is, what brings about such gravity? What brings about such calm? Actually, we all are striving not for gravity and calm, but we are striving for pure love of God. Gravity and calm happens to be a byproduct of striving for pure love of the Lord. Gravity meaning, as I said before, that we can be serious and we can talk seriously about the Supreme Lord, and we don't have to be doing all kinds or making all kinds of foolish words and sounds and ideas and idioms and thoughts which have nothing to do with spiritual life. So what happens is that practice the various activities of Krishna consciousness, such as chanting our 16 rounds daily, such as the various kirtans and the bhajans that we sing, all of these are purifying. And what is purifying means that it pacifies or even eliminates the lust and anger and greed and envy and illusion and those types of feelings, ridicule, mockery, condescension, feeling smug and superior and pride, all that gradually becomes pacified and ultimately becomes dissolved. Becomes dissolved because of the fact that we are now in a different atmosphere. The atmosphere that one enters into can control or it can have some effect upon a person's mind, depending upon how strong or weak that person's mind is. A person with a very weak mind, if he comes into an atmosphere or an environment in which people are smoking or they're drinking or they're they're lusting or they're using language which is foul, he may tend to pick up or accommodate those types of thoughts and feelings and ideas, and he may begin speaking due to that unfortunate association. That is why it is mentioned in our books again and again and again, and Srila Prabhupada mentions it again and again and again in his lectures, that be very careful of your association. And never think that you're so advanced, you're so great, you're so glorious, that you can be unaffected by these things. Srila Prabhupada could be unaffected. For example, he went to this mantra rock concert, and people smoking drugs, taking dope there, taking marijuana, people were stoned. It never affected him one bit. He had his focal point that he was going to bring forth Krishna consciousness. Nothing was going to stop him, and he, with his greatness, his glory, his splendor, he would overwhelm and overcome all that which was there, and people, not that they would give up their drugs, but they would definitely give their attention to Srila Prabhupada when he would sing the Hare Krishna mantra, and when he would talk somewhat about it, because there was something strong, there was something purposeful, something powerful, something determined and deliberate about his whole manner and his persona. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada could do that because he was advanced, but we should not think that we're so advanced that we can go into a tavern down the block someplace and start talking to some of the drunks and we're going to convert them immediately. Rather, we should try to go easy to begin with and work up to those types of things as we become more advanced in spiritual life. A person who is advanced in spiritual life, very advanced, as our Srila Prabhupada was, and some of our devotees, is unaffected by the three modes of material nature. They do not affect him. Lust and anger and greed, although he may see them, they don't affect him because he doesn't have any material desires. If you have no material desires, then you're not linked up with those persons who have material desires, and therefore we don't express, or we don't feel, or we don't act like those persons because the desires are not there. Lust and anger and greed and envy, desire to go to romantic movies or romantic TV shows, or desires to read sexy novels or any of these things. If a person has given up all of these things because he has no interest in it, why doesn't he have any interest in it? Because he has something better, there's something higher, something greater, which we call a higher taste. And that higher taste is inner ecstasy, inner bliss, inner happiness. And that comes from Krishna showering his bliss upon the soul. When the soul is showered with the bliss of Krishna consciousness, then he feels happy. He feels joyful. He doesn't need anything outside of what he's receiving. And what's more, because he is receiving this from Krishna, and Krishna loves to shower his bliss everywhere and anywhere that he can, where to the persons who are deserving, that devotee who receives such bliss loves showering it, loves sharing it, loves giving it out. It gives him more pleasure than what he already has. And that is the nature of Krishna consciousness, and to what I'm coming to right now. We all know, you can just walk outside and you can see, that there are people, if you look, anyone who's making some advancement in Krishna consciousness can see, when you look upon persons who have no Krishna consciousness, you can see just from their faces, as we were talking about the science of physiognomy, and one does not have to know the whole science. One simply, by his devotional practices and by his devotional love and by his devotional experiences, he feels his own joy and happiness and looks out and sees people. They are, for the most part, almost everyone is miserable to some greater or lesser degree. It's automatic. There are three kinds of miseries, as we know. The adhyatmika miseries, which come from one's own body and mind. And if you look at the faces, you see people looking very miserable. They're looking down. They're looking like this, like they lost their best friend, or they lost their money, or something has had many. Let me just give a little better look. They're looking like a little like, kind of like this, or gloomy, wondering, is the sky going to fall in on them on the next moment? You know, all these kind of things. It's tragic. And when you see this, you become, you have some pathos, you have some sympathy, you can't help but feeling that these people are suffering. And when you really think about it, you begin to realize you I, me, you, thou. We were all like that at one time. That, at least I was. And I'm sure there are quite a few others here who were too. We were all miserable. And Srila Prabhupada was really the, it was like the pie, sort of, I hate to use this expression, but the Pied Piper, you know, who played, he played his little pipe, his little flute, and he got rid of all the rats. So Srila Prabhupada, he played the flute of his wonderful discourses, and he got rid of all the rats that were in our hearts and in our minds, and enabled us to know what pure consciousness is, just by listening to him. And by listening to him and trying to emulate what he has given us, then we too become better in our ways. So the adhyatmic miseries are there. People cannot get rid of them by just wishing them away or hoping them away. Most people, what they do when they come home from the day's work, what they do, they turn on the TV set and look for a sitcom they can ha-ha it away, thinking that it's just going to disappear that way. Or maybe they'll watch a mystery show, or maybe they'll watch a talent show, you know, America's Got Talent or American Idol or any of those things, to get their minds off this misery that is there as a result of exploiting others or as a result of being exploited by others. So therefore, these different shows, they give them a temporary respite. That means a pause until they're finally completely exhausted, and then they just go to bed and fall plots down and wake up for another day of the same misery. So there's adhyatmaka, those which come from our own body and mind. Problems, everybody has some kind of... If you ever look at a book of symptoms, physical symptoms. The book is like about this big. It is so big, I didn't know that there were so many diseases, but they seem to be growing year by year. As sinfulness grows, so the diseases grow in proportion. So that's what we find persons entertaining various types of disorders in the eyes, in the head, in the mouth and the lungs. So many people with the flu. Some get the flu for a week, and that's not so bad, but some have it for 3 and 4 weeks, and it puts you out of work and puts you out of sorts, and you can hardly do anything for anyone, including our own self. So these are the miseries. People, as you get older, like into my age, people have problems in the knees and the ankles and the shoulders and the neck. Sometimes you see me doing like this. It gets a little stiff there. It doesn't pain me at all, and thank Krishna for that. But these are the pains that that come as we grow older. And pains in the digestive system, the pancreatic system, pains which come from the liver. People have to get a change of liver, a change of heart, and so forth. So the medicals, they're claiming that, yeah, people are living longer, but artificially longer. Not the kind of length of life that the Pandavas had. They were in their 90s, and they were fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That was real longevity. And they kept in shape. They ate the right foods and so forth. But people eat, I hate to say it, it's pure garbage. Yeah, the best, not under, pure garbage is going on with the meat and all the adulterated foods. Something is good, and then they adulterate it, and they start putting all kinds of things in it to try to make it better. And then you find out that when you look at the ingredients, it's like stretches from the top of the box way down to the bottom of the box. And also, there should only be about 2 or 3 ingredients. But all the other things are additives of one sort or another to increase the shelf life or increase the taste of it or something like that. So these are the miseries that we get. So people are... There's no hope. Even if you have some physical physical disorder or mental disorder, in the case of many devotees have physical problems and difficulties. However, due to Krishna consciousness, they're able to recognize that this is just a part of life. And not only is it just a part of life, but they experience something still higher than just what they're experiencing in the knees or the shoulders or in the neck. They're experiencing Krishna consciousness. And that's a delight. That's a pleasure. That's a form of happiness. So they can live with that misery while they're experiencing ecstasy. So therefore, it's quite different. And not only that, but one can see that this will come to an end at some time, and one day, as long as one continues practicing Krishna consciousness, he will overcome all that. Then the adibodhic, which comes from other living entities, and the adidaivic, which comes from, we know, floods and earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and hurricanes and things of that sort. All these miseries come and people just are helpless and hopeless. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to help themselves. They don't know what the goal of life is. They don't know if these can be overcome. I mean, this is nature. Well, actually, they can be lessened by our good qualities, our virtues, our good conduct. They can be lessened. There's less, for example, right here in this area, there's much less of the calamities happening in this area. For example, when we had the floods, many of the floods, they were in the Malibu area, and they're up on higher area. People's homes were completely drenched. Many of these homes were lost to these floods or the fires which took place. Same thing. It's not accidental. Prabhupada made this very, very clear. There's no such thing as accidents in this lifetime. Everything has a cause to it. And generally, the cause, if it's coming to us, we are the cause of it. And what we should do is to try to overcome these things by changing our entire character and our developing the qualities and the virtues that will be pleasing to the Lord and which will bring blessings from the Lord to us. The greatest blessing, as I have already mentioned, is to be able to go through difficulties, trials, and tribulations, and problems, and not be affected by them, not be disturbed by them, not be shaken by them. You see them, you deal with them, and get finished with them, and move on to the next. But to desire that everything should go just my way, no problems, no difficulties, there was one person I was preaching to him for many, many years. And as long as things were going his way, he liked devotional service. He thought it was good. He thought it was excellent. He liked the whole idea of understanding he's not the body. But what happened is that his wife died. He was very attached, so attached to his wife, that when she died, he considered Krishna his enemy then. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, it's Krishna. He took my wife away from me. Why did he do that? Here I am, I'm worshiping him, I'm glorifying him, I'm reading his books, I'm doing all this, and he takes my wife away from me. And I can hardly subsist or survive without her. This is with him. I said, well, wait a minute. What about all the Krishna? I don't care for Krishna anymore. He did me in wrong. He's against me. This is not an exaggeration. So I said, well, can we talk about it? I don't want to hear about Krishna anymore. That was the end of that. And what about your vegetarian? No, I don't care for vegetarianism. Only if everything goes, this is not Krishna consciousness. I knew it was fragile. I knew it was artificial. Nonetheless, you always have to keep trying and keep trying. But even when you talk about, and we did talk so many times about attachment to wife, attachment to children, attachment to car, attachment to city, to state, all this stuff, to detach, get away from it. Understand you're not the body. And if you're not the body, who are you? You are the soul. And the soul is eternal. And even though you may lose this, lose that, lose this, the soul is in touch and connected with the Supreme Soul and can receive the blessing, the bliss, the kindness, the sweetness, the grace of the Lord and still be happy, notwithstanding that those things disappear. You lose your car, you lose your wife, you lose your kid, you lose that. Sure, it's sorrowful in the sense that, well, the wife gave many, many pleasures, but who is the source of those pleasures? Krishna. So, be attached to Krishna. And if we're attached to Krishna, when those things disappear, we have less. I'm not saying that there would be no sorrow. Yes, especially when a great soul like Srila Prabhupada leaves, a tremendous sorrow for a while, because we don't want such great splendor, such great love, such great spirituality, such great advancement to leave us. We feel that we've been bereft or taken or devoid of something that is not so easily. It's not like you go into the market and you can just go, hey, can I have a Prabhupada? It's not like that, you know, like something huge. You buy. He's a great, great soul. And what he has achieved has come through, you know, millions and millions of lives of spiritual activity. So therefore, when he leaves, we do feel bereft. We do feel at a loss. I remember the day that Prabhupada was mentioned here, Rameshwar mentioned it here, and everybody was just, nobody was talking. Everybody was just kind of lamenting. But after a while, of course, we then began to get our senses sort of together. We always remember, not that we never forget Srila Prabhupada, but we try to understand and glorify him as best as possible. So now tomorrow, as it's the World Enlightenment Day, I've tried to give a picture of the misery that is going on in this material world. People are just filled with this adiatmic, adibodhic, and adida. They're miserable. They have no real purpose. They have no direction. They have no guidance. They don't know what to do except go and watch the TV show or watch the latest movies or watch this, which makes them even more crazy. Because why? Well, they're watching the very thing, the very people that they are like. And what it does is it reinforces the madness. Well, it must be okay because they're doing it on the screen. It's not okay. And it shouldn't be. But the fact of the matter is, it is. And so they take comfort in misery, you know, loves company. So you have your company, all your big movie stars, and you hear movies. But the interesting thing about it is that people, they're thinking that if you have lots of money, you have lots of wealth and power, that's going to bring you happiness. It has absolutely nothing to do with happiness. All it does is it expands the false ego. That's a different kind of happiness. It's not real happiness. Prabhupada refers to it as a false happiness because it's there for today, okay, tomorrow, the day after, and then it's gone. You're a big shot today, and then 10 years later, nobody even knows your name. So many movie stars, I can tell you, you would never even know these names because they're out of circulation. Either they're dead or they're dying. So, therefore, we have a wonderful and great, glorious opportunity. Our opportunity is to help these poor, conditioned souls overcome that which they have. Give them an alternative. Give them an option that there is another way to go outside of TV and movies and circuses and all these kind of things. And that option, of course, is to have this philosophy. Now, there are thousands and thousands of this science of self-realization. Is that right, Savastha? Thousands will be loaded on tomorrow. And everyone, please, I want everyone to take that book especially. It's a perfect introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Why is it an introduction? Because Srila Prabhupada answers so many questions of so many inquisitive persons, people on TV shows, persons on the street, people at his lectures, and he gives answers to all of these things so that people, when they read the Bhagavad Gita, those answers will be clear in their mind because they will have received the answers to many of the questions that come to them. So we have this opportunity. It's a great opportunity to save somebody's life. To save, instead of a person looking like this, they become like a happy face. So why happy face? Because they're feeling something within themselves. And we have to explain that when you give these. By the way, these books can be either given out free or they can be given for a price. It doesn't matter. If a person wants to give a donation, then please take the donation or ask for a donation, but don't demand it. And nobody will care. Nobody be worried about it. So generally people, and it's so easy now. It's the holiday season. Hi, happy holiday. We got your gift today. Oh, who can refuse? Who can step back? That's what I used to do. Hey, happy, we got the holiday. Here, it's yours. Mine? Yeah. Free? Yeah, free. If you want to give a donation, you can do that. It's all about how you can improve and benefit and help your life. So, but if you don't want to give, you don't have any money, no problem. It's yours. Unconditional love. That's what I've just given you, and that's what you'll be giving to all your friends after you read this book again and again. So that's what we want to do. We want to inspire the persons, encourage people. And I want to encourage everyone here to please set a quota. Otherwise, you'll just be give out 5 or 10 books, and then you start to kind of space out and look around. Hey, it's nice weather. I wish maybe I should go to the beach or something. No. If you have a quota, this is what we used to have. We used to have a quota to pay for the books. But now they're being paid for by different sponsors and different devotees. So therefore, but don't take advantage. As I said, if a person, you give it as a gift, and a person says, well, you said it was a gift, so we'll keep it. We don't have to go back on our words. So if the person wants to give a donation, he can give a donation. The important thing is don't make it a money transaction. Make it a love transaction so that they feel you have genuinely, deeply, truly have given them something. And when they start reading it, they see this is all about self-transformation, you know, conversion to a higher consciousness. This is something so beneficial. And when you go out, everyone should have this idea that you have the most valuable, the most precious, the greatest object that can. Fort Knox has a lot of gold in it. This is worth more than all the gold in Fort Knox. The gold in Fort Knox is perishable. It can destroy it. A few H-bombs and it's all gone. Okay? This literature is all over the world. If I lose my book, can I get a copy of... it's distributed, and that's what we want to do. We want to distribute this book everywhere and anywhere so that even if a person loses the book, in a few minutes they can get the book. Also, I have my audio books, but we're not distributing those tomorrow. But for those of you who have difficulty reading and it's difficult to keep your eyes open, especially at certain hours of the day, you can always listen. I know many devotees, when they drive to their different spots, take 2 or 3 hours, and they listen to Ramayana, they listen to Bhagavad Tom, there's Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's so easy to listen to all these, and it's easy to remember when you hear. What did Srila Prabhupada say about hearing? The best form of learning. That's his quote. The best form is hearing. So hear Prabhupada's lectures. Hear his talks. All of his talks are so inspiring. You just want to get out there and help people get over their miseries, their uncertainties, their doubts, their fears, worries, agitation, anxiety. You want to get rid of that. And you can. You've got the wherewithal in your hand. Just make sure it goes in their hand and it stays in their hands. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhupada.